Now, a new study shows that from 2010 to 2014, the poverty rate in Wisconsin was at its highest since 1984, and that economic inequality in the state is one of the worst in the country. Wisconsin now ranks 49th out of 50 states on the income gap between blacks and whites.
And that disparity in Wisconsin isn't just higher than most other states. The rate at which the disparities are growing also seems to be going up, too.
Here to tell us more about that study is Malia Jones, assistant scientist and social epidemiologist at UW-Madison's Applied Population Laboratory. Malia, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, your study found that poverty rates in Wisconsin were higher than they'd been in 30 years. Was that a surprise to you, given that the country at large is recovering from the Great Recession?
It is a little puzzling to see poverty rates going up during this time when we know that the economy has been expanding and unemployment is dropping. But we're not the first to find that poverty rates are actually going up during this time. So surprising at sort of a big picture level, but not totally surprising given what we've been seeing lately.
Well, how did you come by your numbers? Can you break down what you looked at?
Sure. We are looking at a federal source of data that comes from the U.S. Census Bureau called the American Community Survey, and it's a five-year rolling average. So we compared the average across 2010 to 2014 to the 5 years that preceded that, 2005 to 2009.
And why did you zero in on those particular years? I know this has been a little bit contentious with some other people given the overall findings of the study.
Yeah, we looked at those data. The five-year averages from the American Community Survey are probably our best source of poverty estimates, as well as a lot of other indicators of what's going on with the American population. And they're one of the, they're really the only source that we have that's reliable below the state level. So we look at Wisconsin compared to other states, and we also look at the counties within Wisconsin.
So looking at that year in which poverty rates were higher, 1984, what was happening there to compare and contrast with where we are today?
Well, I think there are some similarities in so far as in the middle of the 80s, we're also recovering from a recession. But of course, the policy environment and lots of other differences between those periods. And I think it's a, you know, interesting headline that the poverty rates overall are higher than they've been in 30 years. But what really concerns me is the trend that we're seeing, that they're going up right now in the face of the recovery.
Well, walk us through some of your main findings. What are the headlines for you?
Sure. So we did find that in Wisconsin, as in the nation, poverty rates are did go up substantially comparing these two periods. We also found really substantial differences for some populations. The rate of poverty for children is much higher than it is for adults. And the rate of poverty for children in Wisconsin did go up really dramatically to over 18% in this most recent period. One of the other big differences we see is the race-ethnic gaps in Wisconsin are extremely large. In fact, the gap between blacks and whites on poverty rates was 49th out of the 50 states in the nation.
So how does that, you said we're last, well, second to last, it sounds like there. Mm-hmm. Who was lower?
Maine was the state that is the only state that has a bigger gap between blacks and whites on poverty.
And how much had that increased over the last term that you looked at?
The gap itself is, I think, 28 percentage points. So the poverty rate for whites in Wisconsin in the most recent data was 11%, and the poverty rate for blacks went up to 37%. So there's a big difference, and one of the biggest differences between those two groups in the nation.
And looking at this a bit by city, I know that Milwaukee shows up on a list for among the most distressed cities. How does your research tie into that?
Well, what we see going on in Milwaukee is this intersection between economic status and race. And so Milwaukee has a really high rate of segregation and also a large population of poor people of color. And so you're really seeing this phenomenon where we have not a lot of people who can benefit from the economy recovering in Milwaukee, because there's this almost perfect overlap between being Black and being poor.
So we look at these figures for Milwaukee. They're striking. What about the rest of the state? Did you break it down by county?
We did look at it by county, and what we found was that no county had a decrease in poverty rate, and there were quite a few counties that had a statistically significant increase in poverty rate, including almost all of our urban centers.
And we'll talk a little more later about childhood poverty, but first of all, tell us why this is so significant to you, that the poverty rates for children have climbed the way they have in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I come from a public health background, and so my main interest in looking at poverty is really poverty as a risk factor for chronic disease. And since poverty exposure during childhood is a really influential factor in developing chronic disease later in life, these high rates of poverty for kids are really concerning from a public health perspective.
And did I read it was 1 in 5 children at this point?
Yeah, it's almost 20%.
Malia Jones is with us now. She's an assistant scientist and social epidemiologist at UW-Madison's Applied Population Laboratory. And we're looking at her new report that shows Wisconsin's poverty rate is at its highest in 30 years.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you see this story happening in your community? Rising poverty, economic disparities? What's the solution? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with Malia Jones from the UW-Madison's Applied Population Laboratory, looking at a new report that finds poverty levels are at a 30-year high here in Wisconsin.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing more poverty in your community, in your family, maybe in your own life? And why do you think poverty levels are rising here in Wisconsin? What do you think could be done to turn things around? You can reach us at 800-642-1234. And Malia, one area we haven't gotten to yet is unemployment, or not unemployment, poverty, I should say, among the employed and the unemployed. What are you seeing there?
We found that poverty rose between these two time periods that we're comparing for people who are unemployed, as you might expect, and also, surprisingly enough, for people who are employed both part-time and full-time. So we're actually seeing an increase in poverty, relatively small one, but significant in people who have full-time jobs.
And you also took a look at the education that people had and whether this, how this related to levels of poverty. What did you find on that aspect?
Yeah, so it's a pretty similar story there. Poverty did go up across every level of education, even among people who have a bachelor's degree. So a little bit surprising, the people that we might expect to most readily benefit from a growing economy are also seeing increased poverty.
So as someone who takes a look at these numbers, what does this tell you about where Wisconsin is and what we need to be concerned about on the horizon?
Well, again, looking at the public health perspective, I think this has really serious implications for public health, looking at long-term trends. Poverty is a huge risk factor for a lot of different really costly chronic diseases, including diabetes, hypertension, some of the major causes of premature death, such as heart disease and stroke. And so looking at implications of more people living in poverty in terms of public health, this is a really serious threat. And we need to be thinking about the ability of people in poverty to earn a living wage and contribute productively to the Wisconsin economy and maintain a healthy life into old age.
Was there an urban and rural divide that you saw, or was this something that sort of seemed striking across the board?
It is striking across the board. We saw increases in poverty in both urban areas and rural areas. It's a little bit of a sharper increase in urban areas in Wisconsin as it was nationwide.
So looking now just at rural areas of Wisconsin, where are the counties and areas that were hardest hit?
The counties that were hardest hit were primarily the urban centers and the regions of our state that have a large Native American population. So the counties where we saw the sharpest increase included Milwaukee and Menominee County.
And do you think going forward that policymakers will look at this, and how do you think they might dissect or digest, rather, this information?
Well, I think what we're really seeing here is a story about inequality. The reason that other researchers have cited that we're seeing increasing poverty in the face of a growing economy is that the lowest segment of our wage distribution is really not benefiting from the growing economy, where the higher segments are benefiting from a growing economy. And so I think in terms of looking ahead to the future, we need to address the ability of everyone to take advantage of economic opportunities.
Malia, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Malia Jones, assistant scientist and social epidemiologist at UW-Madison's Applied Population Laboratory. And we've been talking about her new report on rising rates of poverty in Wisconsin. They are the highest that they've been in 30 years.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Spring might be around the corner, but it's not here yet. And if you're a local foodie, you're probably running low on ideas for parsnips, potatoes, and onions. But our next guest says that from a nutritional and economic standpoint, winter is soup season, and it can be one of the most rewarding times of the year for cooks.
For this week's Food Friday, Michael and Jean Muckian will give us some inspiration on cooking restorative veggie soups to help brace us against winter's chill. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite soup to make this time of year? What's your favorite way to use up some what's in the crisper, the root cellar, the storage bin, and make a good winter soup? What questions do you have about making a great soup? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Post on the Central Time Facebook page. Find a recipe there. Michael and Jean Muckian together have reviewed restaurants in the Milwaukee and Madison area for 30 years. Michael recently had a piece in the Wisconsin Gazette on soup. Michael, Jean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, sure. We're glad to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Michael, you wrote this piece on soup. I understand you actually work together on things you write, even if it's just in one byline or the other. But, Michael, why'd you tackle soup?
Well, we consume an awful lot of soup here. We belong to a CSA, and so we have a lot of vegetables at our disposal and some rather unusual ones that we don't quite know what to do with. So Gene turns it into a very tasty, very healthy soup. And we have soup 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a week sometimes.
Wow.
Every day, just about, yeah.
And Gina, are you like me? You've got the vegetables, you don't know what to do with them. When in doubt, make soup out of it?
Yes, it's something that I inherited from my father, who did the exact same thing. Whatever was there went into a pot and became soup.
And this, we're not the first people to make soup, Michael. This has been around a long time. Give us a little of the origins of soup.
Well, I wasn't there, of course, but research indicates that soup residue, I guess, for lack of a better word, has been found in clay vessels dating back about 20 or more thousand years.
Wow.
About the time when early mankind moved from using animal skin bags to store food to firmer clay vessels that they then could boil water in and cook the vegetables in. So it's probably the longest standing type of food that's ever been created that's still around today.
Now, Gene, we mentioned we'll cook with any darn vegetable when it comes to soup, but what are your favorites? What are the ones you're really looking forward to making when you've got that vegetable, making into a good soup?
I usually will look at recipes for ideas. Mm-hmm. And there are times when we get things that I don't really know how to use, like, for example, the watermelon radishes or the beauty heart radishes. I don't know if you're familiar with those. They're delicious, but they're, what do I do with them? So I may go and search something online, or I may look. We have a food dictionary. We have various recipe books and food resources, and I will look in there and see, like, well, what could I use this for? And so whatever it is, probably the one that is the most versatile is a chicken soup that you know, we start with chicken, but then anything, really, literally anything, like a stone soup, you know? We start with a stone and everything else, everybody brings something to the pot.
Yeah, whatever's in the crisper drawer.
Yeah, pretty much. Whatever's in the crisper drawer that we think would be good.
Well, I want to get cooking now. One of the recipes you sent our way, actually, black bean and pumpkin soup. We've got that linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Last I checked, it was called Access Denied Soup, but the link does work if you're going there to look for it. We're trying to fix that. But anyway, you gave this black bean and pumpkin soup. A lot of people think pumpkin pie. I love pumpkin and soup. Gene, talk us through this recipe a little, will you?
Well, what the pumpkin does is it provides somewhat of it's a mild flavor. Pumpkin isn't really an overpowering flavor anyway, so it's a mild flavor. But what it really does is give the soup a very creamy base without using cream. So, for example, if you're vegan, for example, you can get a creamy flavor just by adding the pumpkin, the pureed pumpkin, and consequently, it's a filling soup. You have the black beans, tomatoes, pumpkin. It will hold you over if you have a nice rustic type of bread. It makes a wonderful meal. But the pumpkin, what the pumpkin I found that did, because initially I was a little skeptical as well, and I found that it just provides a wonderful creamy base for the soup.
And Mike, what kind of spices, what kind of flavor profile are we putting in with our pumpkin and black beans here?
Well, that's a good question. I guess you don't want it to lean toward the pumpkin pie side. Mm-hmm. That's right, isn't it, honey?
Yes, you don't want, of course, yeah. You don't want it to be like pumpkin pie.
Well, I would think I could do, since with black beans and, you know, pumpkins and New World food, I would think maybe some Mexican or Southwestern
right.
spices.
Something you can, depending on if you want it spicy, cumin is always good. If you want that kind of a Mexican food feel, you can put in red pepper flakes, maybe a little garlic. I tend to be very frugal with my garlic because I have made soup and have put in perhaps 2 or 3 cloves of garlic and have regretted it because the garlic becomes so overpowering. But if you want, with the black beans, I found cumin goes really well, and then a little red pepper flakes.
And I like to use fresh pumpkin. I often, in the fall, cook a bunch down and then freeze it. Could I sub in fresh pumpkin for the canned pumpkin in this recipe, Gene?
Oh, sure, definitely.
We're talking to Mike and Gene Muckian about cooking restorative soups through the winter, maybe using up the last things in our larder for the winter. You can join in, by the way, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What kind of soups do you like to make this time of year? You can also share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page. Find that recipe for black bean and pumpkin soup. Let's talk potatoes a little bit. Mike, what are some of your favorite ways to eat potatoes in a soup?
Eat potatoes in a soup. That's a real good question. Obviously, the smaller the better, the slices or the dices. That would be the way I would go. Potatoes can be a little too filling if you're not careful with them. And I think you need to balance them somewhat gingerly, even more so than some of the other ingredients, simply because they can be filling and bulky. So I would go for smaller cuts.
And Gene, another recipe you had mentioned, I think, was a rustic potato leek
yeah.
soup. But what is it about? I mean, you always hear potato and leek. What is it about those two that work so well together?
You know, I don't know, but the flavors they just meld perfectly together. When I was a child, my mother used to make her homemade potato soup that she would either add onion or leek to, and she would boil the potatoes and the leeks with caraway. And then when the potato, and she cut the potatoes small, as Mike had suggested, and the leeks in the circles, you know, the just slices of leeks. And then she made a roux that she would then add to the soup. So the roux, of course, would thicken the broth up, and it was delicious. But I don't know if because you know, leeks and potatoes are root vegetables or just the makeup, but they really enhance, each one complements, enhances the flavor. So it's definitely, they're better together than they are apart, you know, so they are very, very flavorful together.
Let's bring in a caller now. We've got Joe on the line in Green Bay. Joe, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Joe?
Well, I was interested. It kind of caught my ear about the black bean and pumpkin soup, and your guests were speaking about different spices to go in that. I, for years, have made a curried pumpkin soup with red curry that has always been good. I was kind of interested in that black bean with it. I've not heard of that combination before.
Joe, and let me just ask you, do you use just you buy a jar of curry paste that you mix in?
I use curry powder.
Powder, okay. Absolutely. Joe, thanks a lot. And that's another, curry and pumpkin do taste pretty good together. Maybe I'd sub in chickpeas or something like that, Gene.
Yeah, sounds very good.
Joe, thanks for that suggestion. And Mike, I wanted to get back to your article a bit. The origins of soup we talked about a bit earlier, the origin of the name soup and restaurant, by the way, speak to this idea of the restorative aspects of soup that we've been talking about. Can you talk about that a little?
Sure. first of all, there's some discussion of where the name soup came from. And one of the popular assumptions is that since the early soups were made from boiled grain and poured over bread, the bread then sopped up the mixture, and that word sop evolved into soup. Hmm. In terms of restaurants and its connection to soup, in 18th century France, street vendors sold highly concentrated variety of soups to the locals that they called restoratifs, from which the word restaurant is drawn because of the healthy nature of the soup. It was a restoring kind of food and helping them be healthy at a time when many of them weren't very healthy. And so that sort of migrated into the whole concept of popular places to eat outside the home, which became restaurants based on restoratifs, the word.
So the restaurant is a restaurant, kind of, by giving you this soup. Well, you mentioned that you eat soup multiple times a week, Mike. Do you feel that restorative power? Does it help you get through the winter?
It's very filling. It's very healthy. It's very moderate in calories. We do a lot of veggie soups. We had one today that was a kale and bean soup and had some carrots and onions and other things in it. And that was very filling. And, you know, the kale is very healthy for you. When we can, we get organics, and we get a lot of those from our CSAs. So to answer your health question, yeah, I think so. I think it's been very healthy and very filling, as I said. And it's easy to make, it's not expensive, and it's very convenient. And we're actually going to go from kale soup for lunch to a seafood chowder tonight, so we're kind of stuck in the same theme.
We are in soup heaven, yes.
And let me, before we let you go, Gene, what is the next soup you're planning to make?
Well, as Mike said, I'm making seafood chowder for dinner tonight. I have several family members who have had different surgeries in the last month, and so I'm making a big pot of chicken soup to take to them because there has been some research done that homemade chicken soup actually does have restorative powers, and so I think my ailing family members would benefit from some homemade chicken soup.
Well, I hope that really does help them out. Gene, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Mike, thanks to you as well.
Oh, glad to be here.
We've been talking to Michael and Gene Muckian. They've reviewed restaurants in the Milwaukee and Madison areas for about 30 years. Michael had a piece in the Wisconsin Gazette on soups, and we've got a link to a recipe on the Central Time Facebook page.